Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now that all 24 teams have played at least one match in the Euro 2024 Championship, it does seem like a good time today to get an update on some of the action. With Scotland on the brink now of qualifying for the knockout stages for the first time in a major championship, Simon Cooper is co-host of the Heroes and Humans of Football podcast and joins us on the line to talk about what else we can expect. Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. So we did see Scotland take on Switzerland. This was in Group A. They secured a draw, which was a fairly gritty thing to do after that awful 5-1 defeat to Germany on day one. So I would imagine their hopes are high now that they can get out of the group by beating Hungary.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about having 24 European teams is there are quite a lot of them that are not very good. I'd put Scotland in that category, although weirdly in the second half they were better than Switzerland. So Scotland-Hungary is the kind of game that you would not see in the Premier League, say, or in the knockout rounds of the Champions League. And yeah, I mean, the Scots could perfectly easily beat Hungary and then they almost suddenly get to the second round. Mind you, the Hungarians will be thinking we can perfectly easily beat the Scots.
Mm. And they were beaten last night, though, weren't they, decisively by Germany?
Yeah, Germany operating in a whole other sphere of consciousness. I mean, with players like Musiala and Kroos and Gundogan, it's very odd because we're all trained on watching this top-level football, you know, played by teams like Manchester City and Arsenal and Real Madrid, and then you see football like last night that just is not there. Germany is more or less in that category, though, of top football.
Mm-hmm. Are they the favourites now to win?
I would make them favourites. I mean, I wrote a book called Soconomics years ago with a sports economist, and we calculated that home advantage is worth about 0.9 goals a match in international football now. It's more than it used to be. So we always know that home advantage is important. It's become more important. So if you add on to a very decent German team, 0.9 goals a game, you also look at England, other favourites, not looking invincible. France, you know, Mbappe has broken his nose. That's an issue, although he hopes to play. So I would say Germany looking best so far.
Mm-hmm. And Kylian Mbappe has his mask. I saw the video of him yesterday opening the box. He'll be wearing that. When's he coming back? Do we know?
It's not entirely clear. I think he wants to come back a bit more quickly than the doctors want.
Yes, and that is probably to be expected. Now, he did catch the world's attention making his position known about the French elections, didn't he, Simon? This is always interesting when we see politics and sport mixing. And he said, I don't want to represent a country that doesn't correspond to my values or our values. But he didn't go further than that. What do you think of him making that statement? Were you surprised to hear Kylian Mbappe saying that?
I mean, in a way, yes, because he's politically always very cautious. I mean, I live in France. I've lived in Paris for 20 years. The very first episode of our podcast was about Mbappe. He's a fascinating guy. He's very intelligent. And he does have strong political opinions, but he's careful of voicing them because he doesn't want to be seen by the kind of mass of the French population as, quote, an angry young black man who is not really French, which is exactly what the far right wants to suggest he is. So, yeah, he didn't go quite as far as to mention the Rassemblement National far right party by name. His teammate, Marcus Thuram, did. He's the only one who really went there and said, we must stop the Rassemblement National. But other players, and, you know, Mbappe said, I share Marcus's views, I share his values. So he kind of clearly aligned with the very explicitly anti-far-right statement. But Mbappe said, I'm against extremes, which some people said, well, do you also mean the far left that you're also against? So that was a bit ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. And has there been a backlash against Marcus Thuram for being so explicit in his views?
Well, inevitably, in a country where about 40% supports the far right, if you come out against the far right, people are going to bash you, especially if, you know, like Thuram, you're a multimillionaire, you play outside France, you're black, which in the minds of many far right voters means that you're only French on sufferance, you're not really truly French, and you have to prove that you're worth being French and so on. These typical far right views. So yes, I mean, he knew he would face a backlash. But you know, his father played for France, his father won the World Cup in 1998, and his father Lilian is a black activist all his life, a very impressive anti-racist activist who named his son, Marcus Tilghman, is named after Marcus Garvey, the Jamaican black nationalist. So this is a long tradition. Also, the fight between the team and the far right goes back at least 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, tonight, going back to the football, two big games. So in Group C, of England taking on Denmark. And I see in some of the papers today, the writers who were watching Musiala playing for Germany, and you've mentioned him, you know, that team playing on a different level. And the English regrets there that he was allowed to leave the England setup. It's about 3 years ago now. I mean, I'm sure they wish they had him back.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the youth teams, in England youth teams. He was a roommate of Jude Bellingham and they were very close. But, you know, England doesn't really have a lack of talent. A team that can leave players like Jack Grealish and Marcus Rashford at home has easily enough talent suddenly up front. So I don't really think that he's the missing link. I mean, almost any other national team in Europe would be delighted to have Musiala, but I don't think that is particularly England's problem. Mm-hmm. They play a very... I mean, the thing is, I didn't ever think that they were going to concede a goal against Serbia or draw, but they do play a very kind of cautious back foot football, which for a team with so much talent is disappointing.
Were you surprised that Croatia drew with Albania last night?
I was, yeah. But I mean, Croatia, I saw the Spain-Croatia game. They definitely looked like a team of old men. I mean, some wonderful players, chief of all, Modric, who were in the World Cup final in 2018, now clearly have reached the end and the younger players are not at that level.
Yeah, the Croatian manager was braving it out last night, saying nothing is lost yet and saying they were looking ahead to playing against Italy. But really, as you say, age is not on their side. And there were those who were romanticising those great players they have on the team. But really, I suppose it proves when you're in a competition like this, you need the talent and the youth, really.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they can look ahead because 16 of the 24 teams will qualify for the second round. So, you know, the first round of this tournament is not very useful. It takes 2 weeks to weed out just eight teams. So, you know, anyone who wins a game has a very good chance of getting into the second round because the best third place teams get to the second round. So Croatia could well do it. It shouldn't be like that.
And Spain versus Italy, that's been marked down as one of the must-see games of the tournament. How do you expect it to go?
Gosh, predicting any individual football match is incredibly dangerous.
Simon, have we lost your line?
Sorry,
your line just dipped there. You were saying it's dangerous to predict. But you mean you've seen Spain play, you've seen Italy play now. Does it give you any sense of what that match might look like? Is it still the must-see of the group stages?
I mean, there's so few games in the group stages between two top teams, and this comes close to that. I'm not sure that Italy is a top team. Spain looked distinctly better. I mean, am I going to be foolish enough to say that Spain is going to win? No. But I mean, if I had to say which of these two teams is a bit better, I'd say Spain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's just so many games between either two poor teams like Scotland and Hungary or a good team and a poor team like Germany, Scotland, that Italy, Spain is a kind of rare currant in the cake.
Yeah, I mean, all of these tournaments, they tend to throw up surprises. How do you characterise the opening group games? Is it a question of just getting through it? You mentioned there, you know, weeding out the ones that just aren't going to make it. Or has it been a fascinating opening few days?
I'd say it's been very enjoyable. It's been fun more than fascinating or surprising. So I can't think of any shock results that nobody had expected, unless I'm overlooking something now. But what you have had is a lot of goals. European football is in a kind of attacking phase. Teams are happy to go forward. The Euro, I think they also take a little bit less seriously than the World Cup. So there's a bit less of a life and death. We must win at all costs. And mm-hmm. we're going to play it safe and put 10 men in front of goal thing. So teams are mostly going out there to have fun, knowing that a defeat is not fatal because, you know, it's quite easy to reach the second round. So there's been really enjoyable football.
Simon, thank you very much. Simon Cooper there. And every match is live on RTE2, the RTE News Channel, and on the RTE Player. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.